extraordinaire of Eyes on Big to join us because he noticed that what a great deal the Goal Line Club tailgates are.
He did. I mean, he ate, he drank. I got to meet his family, got to meet his kids and his lovely wife. He enjoyed himself there. And even though he is what a self-proclaimed Iowa homer, and as we heard on that podcast over the summer, certainly drinks the Hawkeye Kool-Aid, we were able to break bread with him and enjoy a drink together, Luke.
So if you want to see how great a deal the Goal Line Club tailgates are, go to goalineclub.org/events and sign up today. And welcome to another episode of Gopher Gridiron Radio. I'm Luke Buer.
And I am GopherIllustrated.com publisher Ryan Burns. We welcome you guys back to Hate Week. It is the battle for the Floyd of Rosedale. It is Minnesota versus Iowa. It is the battle for the Floyd of Rosedale. Luke, 3 days' time. Minnesota's got to travel to Iowa City to try and get a win in a place they have not won since the years started with a 2. It's been 22 years since Minnesota has walked into Kinnick Stadium and they have walked out with the pig. But other than that, Luke, how are you tonight?
You know, I'm pretty good. As you know, I've had a pretty busy work life of late, and we're recording this very late on a Thursday evening. And by very late, I mean
Wednesday evening.
See, exactly. That's how bad it's been. No, it's not bad. It's all good stuff. I think more importantly, Ryan, I think people want to know why in the world you were texting me so many pictures of a deer that was dead in a field.
We finally did it after... I'm trying to think of the amount
of hours. Is he the one? Is that the one you've been sending me? Like,
no, that is not the one. Okay. There's a bigger one still. You know, it's funny. I was able to release an arrow about 7:10 a.m. on Tuesday morning, which, by the way, I think everyone hates daylight savings. Number one, because it gets dark at like 4:40. Mm-hmm. But I also hate it because my alarm goes from like 5:40 in the morning to then 4:40 in the morning, where I have to get up and drive out to the land and everything. But it was an early morning, so I released the arrow at the big 8-pointer there. You can see the pictures on social media. And then to Luke's point, then the big one walks by a different tree stand about 7:45. But in the words of PJ Fleck, comparison steal your joy, and I am absolutely tickled that I finally got a really good buck on the ground. And hundreds of hours in the stands and way too many lithium AA batteries, 25 different trail cameras. You know what the funniest part about this buck is, Luke? I have 25, I think, trail cameras out there now.
Yeah,
some of them have been quote unquote soaking for months now. I mean, they're deep into deer territory that I haven't checked yet, but I don't think I have a single picture of this deer.
Seriously?
I off the top of my head, I haven't had the time yet to go back and look through all the photos yet, but I don't think I have a single picture. I mean, he is, he's what we like to call a park buck. I hunt right next to a state park or in the vicinity of one, I should say. And so I'm guessing he wandered over there and he was following a doe. And he's a dandy. He's got 11-inch G2s, which is, I'll tell you, that's what I saw for the first time when I saw him at 30 yards. And luckily I was able to make a perfect shot. And as I sent the picture to Luke, when I walked up on him, it looked like a Jackson Pollock painting.
It did.
It looked Photoshopped, honest to God.
I literally thought you were just pulling one over on me, that you didn't actually shoot a buck, and you were just like, it was legit weird photo.
It was a weird photo. I double lunged him, which means it was quick. It was clean. I mean, I heard him crash within 15 seconds of the shot. So, you know, that's the ethical part about it, especially being a sportsman. But yeah, I can tell you it was good though. So I'm happy to now have some, soon I will have some back straps in the freezer, some steaks, some jerky, some ground, some summer sausage, and we will be distributing it out amongst the faithful here, including Luke. So, like, we got to be serving and giving, Luke. And that's where I'm fortunate enough to be able to get one on the ground. And that's where now we got to make sure everybody's taken care of with their venison.
Yeah, no, I appreciate the offer, and I will do my best to consume it in a very thankful manner. So I appreciate that.
Well, I could, you know what the funniest part about that whole thing was? So, like, I find the deer, you know, 50 yards away from the shot.
Mm-hmm.
So then I FaceTime my my fiance, which is, again, still weird for me to kind of say out loud, that whole thing. But and she answers, and it's like 8-something in the morning, and so she's getting ready for work, and she's like, oh, great. That means, you know, now we get to actually sleep at night. And she's like, oh, now I actually get to see you again. And that's where, you know, Justin Garden, when we did the Parent Spare today, you know, he's talking to me about how hunting is a fraud. It's essentially, in his words, deer camp is spring break for grown men, and it's just so heavily accepted.
I mean, for some people,
that is absolutely true. Yes. Like, last weekend was deer opener. You knew it. I knew it.
Mm-hmm.
For some people, quote unquote, deer camp is they go up Friday night, they drink a case of beer, they're late getting into the tree stand, they fall asleep because they're hungover. They complain then at about noon when they wake up how they haven't seen any deer. They are awake for 4 hours in a tree stand. By then, it's probably, you know, time to get down. They pound some more beer. And again, I get it. You know, it's just so interesting. Like, there's like two factions of that whole thing. It's the deer camp, and then it's like the crazy nut jobs like myself where you have 25 cameras. It's a disease. You start naming deer at this point, and isn't it fascinating, stuff like that?
You've legitimately been messaging me for years about this one deer, and I thought this might be the one, I counted the points, and I was like, this isn't the one. This isn't the one.
No, but he is a dandy, and that's where, again, you know, I'm hoping the big one makes it another year, because, I mean, he already is a once-in-a-lifetime type of deer, but again, the one I was able to get on the ground, I'm incredibly grateful, incredibly fortunate for, but, I mean, it's funny to hear, like, even Justin Garrett, and I'm just going to roast him, because I know he's going to listen to this podcast, but, you know, he was telling me, he asked me, Luke, you know, he's trying with the hunting vernacular, and I appreciate that. You know, I get it. You know, if you're not an outdoorsman, speaking the language is a little bit difficult at times. He was doing so well, and then did you know what he said? He said, well, it's a good thing you caught your deer. And I'm like, well, you were doing so well. And I was like, you know, you're starting to sound like my fiance there. And in that context, that's probably not a good thing. But guards, we love you.
All right, Justin, I know you listen. We've DM'd a little bit. There's an open invitation that if you want to get your family out to a farm, you drive out to Atwater, Minnesota. My dad will take you and your kids out on the combine. We will get you in a duck blind. We will maybe even show you what a deer stand looks like. Open invitation, friend.
I tell you, he doesn't have the time. Now, between being the voice of the Gopher women's basketball team,
I know,
K-Fan, the 57 different endorsements he does on the radio there, it's a miracle that we can even get any of his time, as he's trying to kill time right now listening to this podcast.
I know. Unbelievable. Okay. Let's get into this Gopher football game. I am going to legitimately put in the show notes that if you don't want to hear about the deer, skip to the like 7-minute mark.
It's all part of the bit. I'm finally able to live up to the freaking moniker name of all things. But
all right, so let's get to this Gopher game. The Gophers play in Iowa City on Saturday, November 13th. This game will be on BTN at a 2:30 kick. We probably should talk around quickly about injuries. Obviously, no Mo Ibrahim, no Treyson Potts. Obviously, no Cam Wiley. He's in the portal again. We're down to two freshman running backs, as well as a linebacker at running back as well. And then we know that Chris Ottman-Bell went out with an injury. We know Daniel Jackson has struggled with some injury as well. So, what do we got in the injury front for the Gophers?
Last thing I'll say about deer related, and I know Luke wants to move on. The DMs are open. And it's funny because I've been able to make a few friends over the years now, just talking hunting in the DM. So if you want to talk hunting or fishing, or you got picks you want to share, deer hunting related, disclaimer number one right there, feel free to send them on over. But on the injury front for Minnesota, it's essentially just waiting to hear about Chris Ottman-Bell. Now, I know PJ Fleck said on Tuesday during his radio show, Chris Ottendale will play. I don't know that that's 100% factual, because I do believe he's in the concussion protocol or something related to that.
Just based on the hit, you got to think he is.
Oh, I mean, watching his head bounce off the turf.
Yes.
I mean, again, is he on track to play? It sounds like it. Is the head coach optimistic about him clearing all the steps in the protocol? He certainly is. But I don't think it's a definite thing for sure. But because other than that, as far as I've been told anyway, I think Minnesota's relatively healthy. On the Iowa side of things, we have the – do you believe that Spencer Petras is actually injured?
Or do you think
it's a convenient type of excuse to move on from him to start the Alex Padilla era?
I have not asked
Reek enough about that.
I did not even know that they are even claiming he's injured, really.
Apparently he suffered a shoulder injury against Wisconsin.
No.
He was good enough to start the game last week against Northwestern, but then Alex Padilla quickly replaced him after, I don't believe, Iowa went on a scoring drive. Now, I don't know if I believe any of that, but it is the Alex Padilla era now. I would also note that I believe the backup running back for Iowa and Ivory Kelly Martin, I believe he's going to be out from this game from what I've heard from the Iowa beat writers. And the other big news is Riley Moss is back, and that's not a good thing for Minnesota's defense, or excuse me, Minnesota offense there.
Do you think he's 100% though?
He's been out for like the last 5 weeks or so. Yeah. Now, I don't know what the injury is specifically.
Yeah.
But it sounds like he's going to be back. And why that's important is he was probably the front runner for the Jim Thorpe Award at the time. He had a lot of picks. And oh, by the way, in 3 career games against Minnesota, Riley Moss has 4 interceptions. So the one time North Dakota State commit that they flipped on a gray shirt offer, he's an Iowa native, has been a real thorn in the side of Gopher quarterbacks over Riley Moss's 3-year tenure as a Hawkeye defensive back. So looks like he's going to be back for that game, for the game this weekend as well. So looks like both teams are getting a little bit more healthy, depending on if you think that's a good thing or a bad thing for Spencer Petras's phantom shoulder.
All right, let's talk a little bit about when the Gophers are on offense. Again, the Gophers come in. They are scoring 25.9 points per game, 361 yards of total offense, 153 come through the air, 207 per game on the ground. Conversely, Iowa is giving up 15.7 points per game, 305 yards of total offense, 206 through the air, and about 99 on the ground. I did round there, so if you're checking those numbers at home, pardon me, I made the convenient rounding. But Ryan, we know that this Iowa defense is the identity of this team, right? And Minnesota's identity on offense is running the ball, and Iowa does a very good job of stopping the run. So obviously something has to give in this situation. I do think, and you and I both have talked about this ad nauseum with Derek and everyone else, the Gophers have to find a way to produce big plays, and they have to be willing to take some risks.
They absolutely do. If I could recommend anything, it's pause this podcast, go to Gopher Illustrated and read what both of the coordinators said on Wednesday. It should be on the front page somewhere by the time you're reading this. Read what Mike Sanford had to say about the Illinois performance and what he's looking forward to against Iowa. Same thing goes for Joe. By the way, Joe Rossi, I've had the first question for Joe Rossi the last 2 weeks. He has just like essentially roasted me or roasted the question the last 2 weeks. And I say that because, like, last week, it's fresh off the Fleck extension. And Rossi, I go, Rossi, what do you think about, you and the assistants having a little bit more a little bit more pay to go around? He goes, I'm excited about the Illinois game. Like, he gets me, like, 7 words and then moves on to the next question. Or even the game against Illinois. So the one that we asked him about today, I was like, what happened in those first 2 drives? We got out physical, and then that changed. Like he just like is so short with me on these first couple of questions, and I know he enjoys it. But for Minnesota on offense, I mean, we've talked at nauseam. We spent nearly 2 hours talking about it in the last podcast. This is a very good Iowa defense. this is an Iowa defense that is insanely efficient at turning you over. And mm-hmm. if they turn you over, they're probably going to win the football game. And that's where Iowa's run defense, one of the best in the country. I think they're a top 20 run defense right now. They rank third in Big Ten play against the run at 3.2 yards per carry allowed, and also third in Big Ten play with only 104 yards of rushing against them. Well, on the flip side, they're the number one pass defense in terms of defensive efficiency. They have 16 interceptions to 6 passing touchdowns allowed in conference play. I mean, it's insane. It's literally insane. But in that same respect, Tanner Morgan's only thrown the ball 27 times. He's going to have to throw 30 mm-hmm. times in this game. I mean, his season high for passing attempts is 27. That's got to change, because you even look at like the last 4 games for Iowa, and that's where like Graham Mertz threw it 16 times in the first half. That's more attempts than Graham Mertz had against Purdue, Army, and Michigan. Like if before that game got a hand, Wisconsin even knew that their quarterback, who I think is still worse than Tanner Morgan, he had to throw the ball 16 times in the first half. Well, if you extrapolate that to a full game where it's a neutral game script, Graham Mertz would have had to throw the ball 30-something times. Last week, Northwestern, Andrew Marty, the Northwestern quarterback, he threw it 44 times.
Mm-hmm.
Aiden O'Connell, well, maybe it's a little bit of a disclaimer here because, well, Purdue just throws all the time, but he threw it 40 times, and then the Penn State quarterbacks threw it 46 times. You are going to have to throw the ball against Iowa. And that's where, like, spoiler, you know, my key to the game is you got to pass the ball to set up the run. And, oh, by the way, you better start fast. Now, I saw this stat today on Twitter, I believe from David Eichold. Do you know when the last time was Minnesota held a lead against Iowa in a football game?
I hope it wasn't that Max Williams, like, when Minnesota won like 51-14.
Here's the stat. Iowa has not trailed in a game against Minnesota since the fourth quarter of 2016.
Yeah.
That's got to be the entire Fleck tenure against it. I think it is, isn't it?
Yeah, because he started
in 2017 season. Yeah. Fleck has never even led at any point during his tenure against Iowa.
Yeah.
That's an insane stat. That's insane. It's been 245 minutes of actual game time that has passed since Minnesota has just led against Iowa. And oh, by the way, you're going to want to take a lead against Iowa, because if in Iowa City, in Kinnick Stadium, if they can just do what Iowa does to you and drain the life of you, you know, if the Illinois game script from last week comes to fruition here in Iowa City, where Minnesota gets down 2 scores early in the second quarter, I mean, the game's essentially over unless you know something I don't.
Mm-hmm.
So for Minnesota, it's going to be about starting fast. It's going to be about trying to put yourself in a positive game script and to keep it in there. And that's where Minnesota's going to have to pass the ball, because while I expect the Minnesota moving company up front to perform better, more towards that October type of run that they had. I mean, this offense, it's going to be the first team to 20. I think I've said that on so many different podcasts and written it so many different times now. It's the first one to 20 wins this game. And if Minnesota is the first one to get there, I feel pretty decent about their chances.
Yeah. One thing I just want to highlight is this is going to be by far the best defense the Gophers have played all season. I do think that Wisconsin is just on a ring, kind of on its own above Iowa even. But sure. Iowa is as close as anyone in the Big Ten and anyone that the Gophers are going to play all season. But if you look at some of the advanced metrics, like Iowa is no lower than, you know, top 15 in the country. The only place that maybe they struggle is on third and fourth down success, and they're still top 40 in the country. They are just incredibly good defensively, and you know, and they've been able to do that in large part by turning teams over, but they're also just dang good too. It's not just the turning teams over. And additionally, you know, the fact that they're able to be so good in field position also helps, because they're making teams, you know, have to go long distances to score as well. So just in general, what they do and what they're trying to do is put you in bad positions, and then they're going to exploit you on defense, and they're very good at it.
they, you know, what PJ talked about and Stanford did to an extent is Iowa's defenders just always have their eyes on the ball, all 11, whether that's the defensive line trying to get their hands in a passing lane, whether that's the linebackers trying to get a tip ball, whether that's the DBs trying to make a play on the ball. And they, you know, they attribute it to just being a system thing that Phil Parker and Kirk Ferentz have been there for such a long time. They know what they're doing. They know how to force turnovers. And that's where I believe the stat is. No team has forced more turnovers since the 2018 season than the Iowa Hawkeyes. And oh, by the way, if you're going to want to win the pig back for the first time in too long, you better win the turnover margin. And that's where getting Riley Moss certainly doesn't help Minnesota's chances there. But I mean, you're right. I mean, Iowa is really good at forcing turnovers. And I think the stat to know here is in Iowa's two losses this year, they are minus six in the take give. Yes. They're seven wins. They're plus 18.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, if you win the turnover margin against Iowa, you're going to have a great shot.
And the thing is if you know Minnesota well, like we do, what you'll note is when they want to, you know, protect the ball and what they do is they just don't take risks and they don't throw it. But the reality is if they're going to have any chance, like you've already alluded to, Ryan, they have to be able and be willing to take on that risk of throwing the ball, but that's where Iowa might exploit them. So you have to have success, but you just can't become fearful of taking that risk.
No, and that's where Fleck talked about it. Stanford talked about it again. You can read their thoughts for free on that matter, but they both acknowledge there is a gray line, you know, there's a fine line you have to walk because you can't just go into a shell and expect to beat Iowa. There's just no way. You have to take the shots, and you can't be afraid to take the shots. And if something happens and Iowa gets a turnover, you still have to take the shots. And that's where Stanford and Fleck both talked about. They got to get Tanner Morgan playing better because, I mean, like it or not, it's going to come down to the right shoulder of Tanner Morgan. If he can lead this offense and lead it through the air to get Minnesota into some opportunistic situations, they've got a great shot. If he turns the ball over multiple times again, probably not looking too great for Minnesota's chances.
Once again, the Goal Line Club supports Gopher Gridiron Radio, and they make it possible for us to make this podcast week after week after week. Ryan, the Goal Line Club exists solely to support Gopher football. The way that you can support Gopher football is to be a member of the Goal Line Club and join one of their events like the tailgate.
Absolutely. I mean, there's a lot of events coming up at the Goal Line Club here in the next 6 weeks. You know, there's the potential of a luncheon before Wisconsin. We'll see. We'll wait to see and hear if that's definite or not. But you do have the tailgate. And that's where you look at this upcoming weekend in Iowa City. Just like you all are probably looking out the window and seeing it might be raining or it might be snowing. Heaven forbid it's sneet, but it's cold now. It's late November. It's mid-November in Minnesota. That's the reality. That means highs in the 30s again, highs in the 40s. And when you look at that Wisconsin game at the end of the year and you want to be able to go to it, I get it. And you want to be able to tailgate and have a good time. Well, the tailgate at Williams Arena with the Goal Line Club, it's well worth your money. It's unlimited beverages, unlimited Tony's Diner, and you can get all, you know, you can get your money's worth for 3 hours. I think many of you can attest to that. So if you want to sign up for that tailgate to make sure that you can get in there, go to goallineclub.org/events. And then we got all the things with signing day coming up as well.
All right, Ryan, let's take a look at when the Gophers are on defense. The Gophers this season are giving up 18.3 points per game. They are giving up 299 yards of total offense. 196 of those are through the air, and 103 of those are on the ground. Conversely, Iowa is scoring 24.4 points per game, 299 yards of total offense, 185 through the air, and 114 on the ground. This Iowa offense, Ryan, we know is not particularly great. They have been the benefactors of many turnovers, which has put them on short fields, which maybe boosts the perception if you look at, you know, the 24.4 points per game. And you know what? They don't have to apologize for that. They've found ways to capitalize. But generally speaking, this maybe isn't the Iowa offense that you saw last year where they just ran all over the Gophers.
No, it's a bad Iowa offense. I mean, Iowa fans would tell you for Kirk Ferentz standards, it's bad Iowa offense. And there's issues at many levels there, or I guess two levels specifically. One would be the quarterback. That's where Spencer Petras just wasn't getting it done for them. And they made the switch last week to Alex Padilla. He was able to, quote unquote, spark them to 17 points against Northwestern. That's where you want to have the transitive property of college football be a thing, Luke. But I think we've seen now, especially in this 2021 collegiate season,
it's not.
You cannot play you can't play that game. Like, Minnesota goes out and puts a 40 ball up on Northwestern in Evanston. The next week, Iowa goes to Evanston and just manages 17 points. And this Iowa offense, you know, some of it is Spencer Petras. Some of it was, certainly. But to me, and that's why, you know, I thought Iowa wasn't going to be the cat's pajamas, would be the offensive line. Like, center Tyler Linderbaum is a first-round bona fide stud. He's an All-American. And that's where, like, the other four spots along the line, the guards and the tackles, they've just been okay.
Mm-hmm.
Like both tackles have passed pro grades that are 54 or below.
Mm-hmm.
The guards have been good as run blockers, but they have 51 grades in pass pro. So everybody outside of Linderbaum has been incredibly mediocre in pass protection, which has played a part in Iowa giving up the second most amount of sacks in Big Ten play. Now, it's also Spencer Petras being a monument back there in the pocket, not exactly helping out with his pocket mobility. I mean, he makes Tanner Morgan, or at least he did, makes Tanner Morgan look like Usain Bolt with some of the lack of mobility issues. That's where switching to Alex Padilla, I think, is certainly going to help them in that aspect. But in that same thing, it's like, here's why I struggle with this game is, if it is Alex Padilla at quarterback, it's his first career start. And it's like, how is the kid going to respond? Because this is a big game. It's a rivalry game. It's a mid-afternoon game. I mean, and Minnesota's defense is good. I mean, it is. I mean, but it's an Iowa offense overall, Luke. They've scored 31 points in their last three games. Now, seven of those were to Wisconsin. Wisconsin's defense and Jim Leonard, they're really good. But, like, Northwestern's defense held them to 17. And then Purdue, I believe, held them to 7. So they've scored 20 points total against Purdue and Northwestern, where, again, you hate to play the transitive property, but Minnesota's offense scored 61 in those two games combined. So I will continue to say it. You're going to get tired of me saying it. You're going to get tired of reading it on Gopher Illustrated. First 1-20 wins. And that's where, if you're Minnesota's defense, you got to stop the run. And if you can stop Tyler Goodson and you can stop Tyler Linderbaum from blocking like 9 different people, and you can get off the blocks from the guards and the linebackers can flow over the top, and you make Alex Padilla beat you, so be it. But that's even – it was interesting today. Somebody asked Joe Rossi, I think it was Andy Greeter, about what does he remember from that 2019 game. And all I could hear while Joe Rossi was giving the answer was – all I could hear, Luke, was Derek Burns in the back of my head. Because what does Derek Burns say about Iowa and Wisconsin quarterbacks every time they play Minnesota?
They play their best game.
And it's essentially what Rossi said. He said, what I'll remember is Nate Stanley coming out there and throwing absolute darts. Like, he's like, for the first 20 minutes of that game, I don't think a single ball hit the turf. They just came out passing and every pass was perfect. And he's like, then we eventually adjusted, but by then it was too late. And it's like, it's seemingly in all these rivalry games, Minnesota's defense makes the next quarterback look like, you know, Tom Brady. And that's where you're hoping, if you're a Minnesota fan, that Alex Padilla, potentially in his first career start, isn't going to look like the next coming of name your obscure quarterback that was really good before I was born. So it's going to be about getting Padilla off schedule. But to do that, Minnesota's got to sell out to stop the run. You know, the Iowa playmakers, they've got a couple of freshmen. They've got Sam Laporta, tight end. I don't know. I'm going to have to ask Greek about where in the world Tyrone Tracy has been this year. But Keegan Johnson has obviously been very good for them. But it's in the trenches, Luke. Tyler Linderbaum is an All-American. But the other ones have been largely fine to mediocre. And that's been the issue for Iowa offensively, is they haven't been able to get going in the run game, because their offensive line has not been traditionally as dominant as we've seen before.
All right. One thing that I do want to highlight is, you know, last year, I think many Gopher fans just cringe when they think about this game and how many times Tyler Goodson just absolutely gashed them. And, you know, offensive linemen were like 12 yards downfield, you know, getting blocks, and he was untouched for like 15 yards. Obviously, we hope that the Gopher defense is much improved, and I think we've seen that so far. But one of the things that at least sticks out to me in the games that Tyler Goodson has been successful, he's found ways to break big runs, right? Have explosive gains. So for instance, against Kent State, he had a 7-yard average with a 46-yard run. Against Northwestern, he had a 41-yard run, a 6.7-yard average. Against Purdue, he had a 32-yard run with a 5.7-yard average. All the rest of those games, he didn't have nearly the explosive runs. So you got to find a way to make sure that he does not have explosive runs. He also is a formidable foe in the pass game where he can be as explosive as well. Again, against Maryland, he had a 67-yard reception. Got to find a way to bottle him up because he, for my money, he is their best offensive weapon, and he is the one you have to find a way to stop.
Without question, if you can stop Tyler Goodson, you're going to have a great chance to win the football game, especially without Ivory Kelly Martin behind him. It's going to be Gavin Williams, a redshirt freshman. They're not going to want to lean on him too much. And that's where, like, Tyler Goodson could do a lot of different things for that offense. He's kind of like a better Trey Potts to me. And I mean that as a sincere compliment because he can do a lot of different things. They can split him out wide. And that's where I remember watching the Iowa Maryland game, and Iowa split out Goodson a couple different times, and they were able to hit him in the passing game for big plays. He is their big play machine. It's him and Keegan Johnson. And if you can just make sure that Tyler Goodson doesn't find a lot of daylight, it's probably going to go well for you. And that's where I asked Rossi today. I go, what's the number one thing, you know, you're telling your defense? He's like, well, I'm actually telling them three things, but I'm not going to tell you because I don't want Iowa to know. But again, he's getting sassy, man. I mean, I get it. And he doesn't mean to be disrespectful. He's just kind of giving me and other media members some crap, and it is what it is. But like, he's like, we have to stop the chunk plays. He goes, last year, you know, it was a 2-score game going into the fourth quarter, and then it was chunk play after chunk play after chunk play, and that thing got blown open. He goes, if we can make Iowa go 8, 10, 12 play drives, we feel pretty good about it. But if I was having 6, 5, 4 play drives where they're just chunk playing in, they get these explosive play touchdowns, it's probably not going well for Minnesota overall in the day. So if you can shut down their biggest play threat, which is Tyler Goodson, you're going to have a great shot in this football game.
Yeah, I think just to close this out, we know that the Gophers have to find a way to force turnovers. This isn't something they've done extremely well, but if you can be positive in the turnover margin, you know, your odds of success against Iowa increase, as you already alluded to, Ryan, in their two losses. They are negative in the take give. So that's something, you know, if the Gophers are going to step up, they have to find a way to make plays in that department as well. All in all, I do think this is a much improved defense for the Gophers relative to last season, but man, I still just cringe when I think about that game. It's time for Gopher Math, Ryan. This is the part of the show where I tell people that they have to pay taxes. I think they probably already know this, but maybe what they don't know is that they could have a tax professional actually come to them with plans, right? Something that's personalized to them in a way to help them save money, but not for just this year, right? But for the long term, you know, out into their future. Maybe they don't have kids now and they're going to have kids and they're going to have to pay for college. Maybe they're going to retire. Maybe they're going to sell a business. Whatever it is, Ayers Rock Planning can come and bring you personalized and professional tax plans that aren't going to cheat the tax code or exploit it, do anything illegal, but actually use the tax code to your advantage. So if you are looking to save money on your taxes and you're looking to save for the long term, reach out to Ayers Rock Planning at ayersrockplanning.com or slide into the DMs at Ayers Rock Plans. Again, Ryan, this is Gopher Math too, and they have a question and they're going to give you 2 months of GI for free if you're the first one to respond.
We're into mid-January at this point, if you get this right. So you get 2 free months, either added onto your current subscription, or if you want to know what life behind the paywall looks like 5 weeks before signing day, where I start to get incredibly anxious, as do many members of the staff, because signing day is just 5 weeks away, just answer the question and do it in a timely fashion, will you? So this week's question is, the size of the halftime deficit overcome by Minnesota when they last won in Iowa City, which is 1999, plus the number of Iowa pass attempts in that Gopher game in 1999, plus total Minnesota wins against Kirk Ferentz divided by the Gophers' AP top 25 ranking going into Iowa City on that fateful day in 1999 when they last won. So if you got that, it's a whole number. Tweet it at Ayers Rock Plans, at Ryan Burns MN, at Gopher Radio with the hashtag Gopher Math. First one there gets 2 free months of GI, and you get to see all the goodness found behind the paywall. Good luck.
All right, let's get to the facts and the figures for this specific game, Ryan. Again, the Gophers are playing on BTN. This is Saturday, November 13th at 2:30 p.m. The Gophers currently sit as a 5.5-point underdog.
To be fair, that line opened at Iowa minus 7.
Yeah.
So there's at least somebody or many people that think Minnesota can at least cover that.
Yeah. Over under is 37. Again, I mentioned before that this is on BTN. Should note on the season, Minnesota is 6-3 overall, 5-3-1 against the spread. Iowa is 7-2. They are 5-4 against the spread. And then maybe just taking a real quick look at the weather in Iowa City on this date. Looks like sunset is going to be about 4:49 p.m. Very likely that, well, not very likely, it is going to end in the dark. But at kickoff, it looks like it'll be about 37 degrees. The feels like temp actually will be closer to 30 degrees. And as the game concludes around 6 p.m., it should be about 36 degrees with a feels like temp of about 31. So just slightly warmer feeling. The humidity is going to be relatively high in the low 70s. The game will start a little bit more windy with about 12 miles an hour and will end at about 5 miles an hour. Wind really shouldn't be an issue at this very early forecast. But yeah, it looks like an okay day for football, maybe a little bit chilly for some of the spectators and maybe feels a little bit damp, but overall it should be a good day for football.
Well, that's where I think we all know it. By the time you're listening to this, it might be snowing wherever you listen to this in the upper Midwest. There is some light precipitation where it's currently raining here Wednesday night in Roseville. And it sounds like there's some snow coming in Thursday night into Friday morning. Some flurries, doesn't look anything crazy. But in that same respect, it's now time for this cold weather. It's Big Ten football. It's 37 degrees. The wind doesn't look too terrible, as Luke said. It's going to be about who wants it more up front. So welcome to cold weather. Let's see it.
All right. So, Ryan, we have to get to your keys to the game. Again, just a reminder for folks, Gophers are a 5.5-point underdog with an over-under of 37. If the Gophers are going to win, what are going to be those keys, Ryan?
Well, the first key to the game, I already alluded to it, a little bit, talked about it a bit. They are going to have to pass the ball to set up the run, and heaven forbid, they got to start fast. Because I'm not sure there's another way to put it, but Minnesota had an absolute of a dud of a game last week offensively.
Yes.
Not sure if you watched it. Not sure if you listened to the cathartic podcast that we spent far too much time talking about it.
Yeah.
Yes. The Illini were able to put the Gophers in second and long, third and long situations all day long. And Mike Sanford's offense was never able to recover. Well,
can I add to this point? Because I do agree with you greatly.
Go
here.
For it.
I do want to add that one of the things we often say about Wisconsin and Iowa is, you know, if they get off script, they're not usually very successful. We also know this is very true of Minnesota. So if you're going to win, you got to stay on schedule and on script and stick to your game plan. We also know the Gophers have struggled to make in-game adjustments, especially on offense. So starting fast is especially important in this game for Minnesota.
Well, that's where like both teams want to do the same thing. They want to get an early lead, sit on the ball and make plays on defense. Well, for Minnesota, it's like, as you alluded to, this is the toughest defense that Minnesota's gone against this year. Iowa's a top 20 defense. They rank third in the Big Ten in yards per play or yards per carry allowed, third in the Big Ten in conference play, and only 104 rushing yards allowed per game. Now, conversely, Minnesota's averaging just north of 200 rushing yards per game in conference play. So something has to give here, and it's going to be about the trenches. Now, if Minnesota can get some stuff done up there, they're going to want to pass the ball. They're going to have to pass the ball regardless. But that's where I alluded to earlier. Iowa's passing defense is number one in conference play in defensive efficiency. Like, they got 16 interceptions to 6 passing touchdowns. Wow, that's insane. But look at the recent games where Iowa has lost or the game's been close. Look at the opposing strategy of the offenses. Graham Mertz, I alluded to it, he threw 16 times in the first half against Iowa when that game was still close, which is more passing attempts than he had in the entire game against Purdue, Army, and Michigan. And his 22 overall attempts in the day were the third highest mark of the season. Last week in Evanston, Northwestern quarterback Andrew Marty threw it 44 times. How did Purdue beat? They beat Phil Parker's defense. Aiden O'Connell had a sensational day with David Bell. He threw it 40 times. And then the Penn State quarterbacks in that tightly contested game threw it 46. Do you sense a theme yet, Luke?
Yes.
Okay, Iowa's 2-2 in those last four games. But the apparent recipe to throw the ball has been not only evident to one, not two, not three, but the last four opposing offensive coordinators. So to beat Iowa, everybody knows, while it also helps that, again, you can say what you will about negative game script, but you got to throw the ball. Mm-hmm. And it's easier than trying to run it consistently against that run defense. So you'd hope that this is the game where Minnesota lets Tanner Morgan and game plans, heaven forbid they game plan for Tanner Morgan to throw the ball 30 times. Now, I say game plan because Tanner Morgan has only thrown the ball 27 times. That's his season high mark for a game for Minnesota this year is a 27 passing attempt.
Was that the Nebraska game?
I believe so. And that was where he had the sensational first half. Looked like it was 2019 Tanner Morgan all over again. But I hope, I pray, you can praise whoever you want that Mike Sanford's game plan has to include thinking and designing the offensive scheme around Tanner Morgan throwing the ball more like 7, 8, and heaven forbid 9 or 10 times a quarter.
Can you imagine? Like, can you imagine right now the people that are wanting that are wanting Tanner Morgan benched? How much they're cringing hearing you say this, right?
Well, it's again, Tanner's going to sink or swim.
No, I know.
And that's where, like, yeah, then we can talk about it. But yeah, I definitely get it.
I'm with you 100%.
I definitely get it. But it's like the game plan from Sanford and the offensive staff this week has to revolve around knowing that Tanner's going to have to throw it a lot. And so it can't be a surprise if you get into the early third quarter and it's like, well, we weren't able to run the ball. So I guess, you know, we didn't have the passing concepts ready. You know what Iowa's going to play. It's like cover two, cover three. It's what Phil Parker does consistently. But, like, you have to design the game plan around Tanner Morgan throwing the ball 30 times, and you're going to be able to run it 30 times. This is going to be a very similar game to Illinois last week where possessions will be at a premium. Now, I mentioned it earlier. Fleck said Monday and Tuesday he's expecting Chris Ottman-Bell back. So you're going to have Ottman Bell, Brown Stevens, Dalen Wright, Daniel Jackson, and the tight ends. Now, build a damn game plan around them that will actually move the ball against Iowa. Like we saw last week, Sanford just wanted to chuck it deep. And where was the short passing game? I asked him about that. You can read his answer. But with a quarterback that was seeing ghosts last week, one that was getting happy feet, it is incredibly vital, and I cannot stress that enough, that Tanner Morgan needs to get into a rhythm early, and if he gets off schedule, you need to find a way to get him back into that as soon as possible, because if it's a confident Tanner Morgan, Minnesota's absolutely got a shot here. But if it's not, it's going to be tough sledding. Now, I'm not asking for Fleck to abandon the run, and even if I was, we all know they won't do that. They're going to try to run the ball. I'm skeptical that they're going to find consistent traction. But it also comes down to what has Iowa done for so long in this conference? They have bullied you up front. How many years in a row now has it seemed like Iowa's offensive and defensive lines have gotten the best of Minnesota?
Basically, too since Flex has been here.
And that's where this year, it shouldn't be that way. I don't think these two are really on different tiers. And if anything, I'm not even going to go there. People are going to think I'm a homer. But look, the offensive line played incredibly well in October. And they were matched last week. They were out physical. And I happen to believe that I'd like to think they're going to bounce back this week in Iowa City against an Iowa defensive line that doesn't feature Davion Nixon and Chauncey Golston. I mean, Zach Van Valkenburgh is the one I'm worried about most, because I've seen big defensive ends versus the left tackle before, and it didn't go well in 2018. I think everybody will remember that. But this needs to be a bounce back game from the Minnesota Moving Company. I can assure you, there is no one on this planet who wants to win this game more than a Sioux City, or I'm going to get this wrong, Sioux Center native, who is the best run blocking tight end in the Big Ten per Pro Football Focus in Cokeve. Minnesota knows they need to run the ball enough. They know they need to protect their quarterback, because if they don't, it's going to be a long day. But as I mentioned earlier, in the Fleck tenure, Minnesota has not even led. Has not even led against Iowa. And if you have a shot in this game, you need to at least keep this thing close. Heaven forbid, get a lead early in this game, Luke. And that leads me to my second point, which, if you're going to do that, you probably got to win the turnover battle. Probably. I mean, it's easier said than done, because the Hawkeyes rank number two in college football in the turnover margin at plus 12. For comparison, Minnesota's 59th, and they're tied for 59th at plus one. In the two games that Iowa has lost this year, they're minus six in the take give. In the seven games they've won, they're plus 18. Luke, it doesn't take a genius or anybody to know that I'm trying to make a point here. If you take care of the ball against Iowa and you can force some turnovers yourself, you're going to have a great shot to win the football game. Because this is an offense that's not exactly clicking. 31 points in their last three games. They made a change at quarterback last week to try and spark that. I don't expect Kirk Ferentz to look back, so I expect to see Alex Padilla in his first career start against your Golden Gophers this weekend. It's with an offensive line that is incredibly good in the middle with Tyler Linderbaum. He's an All-American, but he's going to be a future first-round draft pick. But left tackle Mason Richmond, he's been average. Left guard Kyler Schott, he's been sensational as a run blocker, mediocre in pass protection. Right guard Connor Colby, he's been really good as a run blocker, terrible in pass protection. Right tackle Nick DeJong, George Karlofkis, his highlight tape on ESPN when he's drafted is going to be against Nick DeJong. So if you can stop the run, that's the key. The key to defeating Iowa, don't allow them to run the ball. Easier said than done. You got a really good interior. They've got a quarterback who's going to be making their first career start. What do you think they're going to want to do? Run the ball to make Padilla be able to set in. But if I'm Joe Rossi here, I'm selling out early to stop the run. If Padilla in his first career start makes the throws, so be it. But if you can stop the run, put them in third and long, put pressure around Padilla, you're going to put him probably susceptible into making some errant throws, and you're going to be hoping that you have the Iowa-tipped ball turnover luck and you can be able to come away with a couple of possessions. So it comes down to Tanner Morgan versus Alex Padilla in terms of what quarterback's going to take care of the ball better. And the last key, Luke, it's not sexy, but it's win the field position battle, because you can't let Iowa just quote unquote Iowa you to, well, you know, Iowa you to death.
Yeah, this is going to be probably the one of the harder things to win, right? Because
Iowa it's incredibly difficult. Do you know why? Because the Hawkeyes rank number one in college football in field position margin.
Yes,
that's out of 130 FBS teams. It's why Iowa's 7-2 with a mediocre offense is. Their punter, Torrey Taylor, is really good. He's got 58 punts this year, Luke. Do you want to guess how many of those 50 or 58 have been down inside the opponent's 20?
I go 34.
48% of his punts have been down inside the 20.
Not quite as many.
Okay. That's insane. Their punt returner, Charlie Jones, is among the best in the Big Ten. The Hawkeyes lead the Big Ten with 28 punt returns this season. And oh, by the way, they're averaging nearly 10 yards per punt return. That doesn't seem like a lot, and I get it, but it's the little things that have brought Iowa into the top 25.
Mm-hmm.
They've got a great defense, but that offense is not very good. So why are they where they are? Because they are constantly on short fields. Whether that's the defense putting their offense on short fields because of turnovers, or whether that's Torrey Taylor flipping the field and the offense can't respond, and Charlie Jones is able to put them in an advantageous situation. They're constantly flipping the field.
Mm-hmm.
Now, if you're wondering, okay, Iowa's number one in field position margin. Where's Minnesota? They're actually pretty good. They're 16th nationally. So whoever wins the field position battle, I tell you, they're probably going to win a football game on Saturday afternoon in Iowa City.
All right, so let's get to our predictions. I thought your three keys were spot on. I thought if you skipped over special teams, I was going to make sure we fit that in there, but I appreciate you having that in because I do think that's going to play a vital role, and we know what a struggle special teams can be for Minnesota sometimes. But, you know, at punting wise, kickoff wise, they've been actually pretty good this season. So let's get to those predictions, Ryan. Again, just a reminder, this is a 37 over under. People, who is saying they don't like the over under? What do they want us to call it?
The game total.
The game total. Like, okay, so 37 game total. Iowa is favored by 5.5 points at this point. So, for me, if the Gophers can't find a way to get out early, and right now we have no history to show that they are capable of doing this. Illinois, I know that the Gophers have bounced back after losses at home. You know, they did this twice now at Colorado and then at Purdue. They bounced back really well after, you know, subpar performances at home where they had a win against Miami. And then obviously Bowling Green happened again. We're kind of following the same narrative here. You know, history this season would say that you're going to bounce back. I just think that Kirk Ferentz and squad just have PJ Fleck's number. I'd love to be wrong about this, but I see this as basically a 20, let's call it 21-17 Iowa victory.
Like, I want to, number one for the brand, pick Minnesota. I did it before the season, and I wonder how much of our tone is so recently biased because of that Illinois game performance.
Yeah, that's fair.
Like, say Minnesota was able to come out of that thing like 17-14, and they'd both be 7-2 right now. They'd both be ranked top 20 teams.
Yeah.
How much more confident would people feel? Because here's the thing I'd tell you is we've seen this story a couple times before. And what I mean by that is Minnesota has a clunker at home, and then they go on the road this season. You have the Miami of Ohio debacle early in the season. Minnesota just sleepwalks through that one. They're able to come away with a victory, but they didn't play well, especially offensively. What happens the next week? They go out on the road to a Pac-12 team and they absolutely thump them 30-0. Okay. Then we saw the Bowling Green debacle at home. Minnesota sleepwalks again at home at 11 a.m. kick. What happens the next week? They go on the road and they have their best win of the season against a Purdue team that turns out is pretty good. And they beat them by a touchdown. Well, you have another clunker at home. So how does Minnesota respond? They're 2-0 on the road after clunkers. They're undefeated on the road this year. And another point that I talked with Justin Gard and Chip Scoggins about on the Pair and the Spare podcast today was all the pressure here is on Iowa. Like, there, I feel like there are no expectations for Minnesota in this game this week because of what happened against Illinois. Like, I was favored. I was at home. I was ranked. Like, no, I feel like no one's thinking that Minnesota can win this game. I mean, do you hear, you know what I'm trying to say here is, yeah, like, last time they went into Iowa City in 2019, all the pressure was on Minnesota.
Yes.
And this year it's like, well, everybody's expecting Iowa to win, you know, here we go again. Fleck's going to be 0-5, which he very well could be. I mean, hell, the man hasn't even led against Iowa in his professional tenure as a Minnesota football coach. But, like, I can spin you a tale where Fleck absolutely gets his first victory in Iowa, gets his first victory against Ferentz. Minnesota finally gets out to a quick lead. You put Iowa's offense in a pass-happy situation with a quarterback that's making his first career start. Probably results in turnovers. And then Fleck and Sanford can just sit on the ball for a low-scoring victory, of which, if that's the case, just for the aesthetic purposes of social media and Twitter, I would hope and pray that PJ Fleck would take every single timeout. And then once he's out of timeouts, try to take another timeout like your Mike Zimmer and get flagged for it because of what happened in 2020. Now, I also can see, as the public thinks, that Iowa wins this game because we've seen it for 6 years straight now. Iowa does to Minnesota what they've done so frequently. They bully you in the trenches, get out to an early lead, sit on the ball, pin their ears back on defense, and then coast to another home victory. So I'm going to take Minnesota plus 5.5 here. Because I do believe this team rebounds, and especially in the trenches. We saw last week how Illinois showed up and they slapped both the defensive line and the offensive line in the mouth the defensive line ended up recovering, but the offensive line never found their footing. And in a rivalry game, I think Minnesota's offensive line will respond. But, you know, I'm having a hard time pick this one because, like I said, I think first one of 20 wins. But until we see more from the passing game, because that's another thing that we talked about today was we keep saying that we think Minnesota has a better offense than Iowa and Wisconsin.
Mm-hmm.
But we have yet to see that against, like, stiff competition consistently.
Mm-hmm.
Like, do I think Tanner Morgan is probably I don't want to get down that rabbit hole, but do I think, like, Minnesota's playmakers are better than what, say, you know, is Minnesota's pass catchers better than Iowa's? I would say so.
On paper, like, yeah, definitely. On paper,
have we
for sure.
seen Tanner Morgan play well in big games before? Yes. Alex Pedillo making his, like, they have more of the tools to put it together, but they've yet to put it together. And until we see Minnesota's passing game put it together, it's tough to think that the streak finally ends this year. I'm going to go Iowa 20, Minnesota 16. And in case you're wondering, that 16 includes a missed extra point because I have to remain on brand. But that would be Minnesota plus 5.5 here and the under. I just like I have the tough time with this game, Luke, just because of everything I said is like Minnesota could win in the trenches here.
Mm-hmm.
If the defensive line and the offensive line come out with some tenacity like we saw against, say, Nebraska. Like, this could be a game where Minnesota actually gets a lead.
Yeah.
And then they can sit on the ball and do what PJ Fleck wants to do, and Rossi can kind of pin his ears back some. But I just have a really hard time, number one, thinking that it finally goes right for Minnesota and Iowa City, considering the last time that it did, I was 7 years old, because I want to make everybody feel very old. But I just have a hard time believing it happens until it does. And if it does, we'll eat crow and we'll have a great podcast on Sunday breaking down Floyd finally being back in Dinky Town. But they have the capability to win this game. Like, it doesn't feel hopeless like some of these Minnesota games that I've covered before against Iowa, where it's mm-hmm. like 2018, where it was like, I think it was Anthony Nelson who just baptized the right tackle at the time. And then Daniel Faalele era started after 4 sacks in the first half. Like, could the left tackle have that kind of a performance again against Zach Van Valkenburg this weekend? Yeah. But I think the rest of the offensive line bounces back this week. So we'll see how it goes, Luke.
Once again, Ryan, it's time for the Burns Insurance Agency to tell you how good they are at shopping for the best insurance you can find in the market.
Well, I tell you, from talking with my dad today, the owner of the Burns Insurance Agency, gigantic Gopher football fan, the man believes in service, and if you can get it a little bit more, service. His goal isn't to be the biggest insurance agency in the world, but to be the best local agency, putting your needs first and providing you with the service you deserve. Many Gopher fans have contacted my father. They've experienced that exemplary service that they deserve. And like I said, he's a local independent insurance agent. He's got access to 20 different insurance companies to get the best coverage at the best price. That's great savings and great coverages. And above all else, great service. Those are the keys to his game. So if you want to learn more, you want to get a free quote for your boat, your commercial business, your home, your auto, to make sure that you're getting the best price with the best amount of coverage, give him an email at bill@insurancebyburns.com or go to his website at insurancebyburns.com to learn more.
All right, let's take a look around the Big Ten. We've already previewed the Minnesota-Iowa game. So let's start with the 11 o'clock games, Ryan. Number 6, Michigan hosts Penn State. The over-under for this game, the game total is 48.5, with Michigan being a favorite with 1.5. I feel like this is, I don't know, I just feel like, how is it Michigan only favored by 1.5? I recognize that Penn State's at home. This game will be on ABC, but still, I just feel like this is Michigan's game to win.
Here's where I'm at with I'm surprised that Penn State's not ranked. They have two road losses to top 20 teams in Iowa and Ohio State. and they lost to Illinois, which we'll see what Illinois does here the rest of the year. But it's like, is it a coincidence that the SEC, in terms of the college football playoff rankings, has the highest rated one loss team, two loss team, and three loss team? Like, why is Penn State not ranked, but some of these I'm going down a rabbit hole here, but Luke, you know what my favorite thing about Penn State is, and it's now a running bit between you and I? You think Penn State's going to be able to run the ball against Michigan?
Well, that's the thing. Like, they can't run the ball. Michigan's got a pretty good defense. I know Sean Clifford's been playing better after being injured, and I know that everything runs through him, but I was just really surprised that line was so close. I just feel like, man, if Michigan's going to continue their hot streak, they win this pretty handily, but maybe I just don't
see it. What'd you say the line was for this game again?
1.5 for Michigan. That's it.
Well, that's surprising, because if Jim Harbaugh has proved anything at Michigan, he can beat unranked opponents. It's he loses to Ohio State and Michigan State, and he beats the crap out of everybody else. Now, I know Penn State hasn't been playing well recently. Some of that's tied to Sean Clifford's health. Some of that's the inability to kind of run the ball, but I understand it's in Beaver Stadium, but I'm going to take Michigan here because, again,
yeah,
Harbaugh wins these games. It's everybody not named Michigan State or Ohio State that he struggles with.
Mm-hmm. All right, let's get to the other 11 a.m. game. This is Northwestern being hosted by number 18, Wisconsin. This game will be on ESPN2. The game total 41, Wisconsin a 24.5 favorite. That feels a little steep on the spread there to me. But, you know, Wisconsin has been trending in the right direction. They're playing better. They do have an elite defense. I'm just not necessarily convinced that Graham Mertz is going to get it done. Again, it's very low scoring. I know that Northwestern is going to struggle to score, but I just imagine that they'll be content. Being Wisconsin will be content to hold a slim margin. And I think Northwestern, well, now that I think about Northwestern.
I'm surprised that the total's so high.
You mean 41? No, 41. 41.
Yes, 41. With how big the spread is, I mean, you're expecting Wisconsin to win by 3 touchdowns. Like, could they? Certainly. You saw the game plan last week.
Yeah.
Where the Wisconsin offense can have Iowa type of scoring drives of 3 plays, -7 yards, certainly. But I just have enough respect for Pat Fitzgerald's defense that I don't know that I see Wisconsin being able to do what they did. Have we also heard if Ches Malusi's okay? I missed that if we have.
I don't know. I don't know that. But the thing that I guess where I'm going to is Northwestern has struggled giving up a lot in the run game. I guess that's maybe the one.
Sure. Over under Graham Mertz passing attempts of like 15 and a half for this game.
I'll take the over, but yeah.
Yeah. So it looks like a big Braylon Allen day on paper.
Yeah.
I mean, again, Northwestern's offense versus Jim Leonard's defense. I think we're all going to give the Wisconsin defense the credit there. I can't see Northwestern scoring more than 10 points. But I'm also like, would it surprise you if this game's like 28-10 or 31-10? And if that's the case, Northwestern covers.
Yeah. All right. Let's move to the final 11 o'clock game of the day. This has Rutgers being hosted by Indiana on Big Ten Network. The game total is 42. This actually blew my mind when I saw this spread. Indiana, who is currently 0-6 in the Big Ten, 2-7 on the season, is a 7-point favorite, Ryan.
Kind of tells you what you need to know about Rutgers right now.
Apparently. Ain't? Yeah, apparently.
Now, Indiana's, I think, playing, I don't know, I feel like I say this every time I talk about Nebraska, but they're playing better than what the record says.
Yes.
Plus, Indiana's at home here. The Indiana quarterback has showed that the true freshman kid has showed he's at least a little bit more capable. He's been able to get Peyton Hendershot and Ty Freifogel at least a little bit more back on track, and that Indiana defense is good enough. But I think it tells you everything you need to know about the Rutgers offense right now, because that thing is dreadful.
Mm-hmm. Okay, let's jump to the 2:30 games. I think this is the game of the week for me. I don't know if you do. Even though the spread is so big, I'm just interested to see what Purdue can do at Ohio State. This game is a 2:30 kick on ABC. The game total 62. Ohio State still a very, very healthy spread in favor of them at 20.5. I do think that the weather is going to make this interesting. It looks like there might be a little bit of precipitation that could be factored in here. But again, you know, Jeff Brohm and squad have done very, very well against top five rated teams this year. I still think that Ohio State is kind of on a class of their own, but I am interested in this. It's got my attention given the rankings and given what Purdue has been able to do against top five teams.
Well, it's interesting because, I mean, technically, I guess Ohio State's lower ranked in terms of the college football playoff rankings than what Michigan State was a week ago, yet that was a 3-point spread. Whereas this week, it's 21. So, again, it's in the big house, but Purdue has shown that they're top five slayers, especially this season. Now,
you mean the horseshoe, right?
Yes, in Columbus there.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I don't know if Ohio State covers. That's a big number against a team that has showed they're pretty capable and they're a top 25 type of team. But I'm with you. I mean, until someone can dethrone Ohio State, the way they're playing right now, I mean, I don't want to get in their way. Now, I would take, I guess, Purdue plus 21 in that aspect, because I think Purdue can at least keep up with them a little bit, which is half the battle for Ohio State. If you're going to beat Ohio State, you better be able to put up points offensively. And I think if we've seen anything from Purdue, when Aiden O'Connell is on, that offense could put up points with the best of them.
Mm-hmm. All right, the final game of the day is going to be a 3 p.m. kick on Fox. This will be Maryland being hosted by number 7 Michigan State. The game total is 61. Michigan State is a 13-point favorite in this one, Ryan.
I just don't believe Mike Locksley.
I can't believe this spread isn't higher. Like,
I mean, that's a lot of points. I mean, it's still almost 2 touchdowns.
Yeah.
If Taulia can find something, I mean, they obviously can make this a ball game, but you get Michigan State back at home, back in East Lansing. I don't have any faith in Maryland's defense. I think Jay Johnson can figure it out with Peyton Thorne. I don't know, injury wise, if they get back their stud receiver and their left tackle this week, I haven't been paying attention to that, but again, I think you take the favorite here and you take Michigan State to be able to get it done. Even, can we also talk about briefly here and then we can get out of here? So did you see with the college football playoff rankings, now Michigan's ranked ahead of Michigan State, even though just like 10 days ago,
they beat them.
Michigan State beat Michigan.
If
they're going to be ranked ahead of them, what's the point of even playing these games? Am I missing something?
I don't know. I think it's so hard. I think the fact
I think like, do I think Michigan's probably a better team?
Yeah, I think
if
so.
If they played that game 100 times, do I think Michigan wins more than Michigan State? Yes. But they still played the game and Michigan State still won.
Yeah, they got to mean something.
And that's where I'm just sitting here thinking like, are we just going to put like the four most marketable teams into the college football playoff because that's what the bigwigs want? But like this whole discussion becomes a moot point when hopefully in the very damn near future, they just make this thing 12 and then everything is just moot because no one then would care 6 versus 7 just about who gets in and who doesn't. But I just wanted to make sure I didn't think I was drinking the crazy stuff that just 10 days ago we played this game and yet you're going to put the Wolverines 10 days later above them, even though they lost to the number 17.
Yeah.
Wild.
In my fantasy football chat, I have some guys that I played fantasy football with for a long time. And one of the messages today was very good, so I'm going to read it verbatim. He goes, even as a Viking fan, I have a hard time imagining what it's like to feel like growing up in Ohio as a Cincinnati Bearcats fan, watching Ohio State being great every year and realizing there is nothing from stopping you from being a Buckeye fan. And then in your one year when your team is 9-0, Ohio State is in the top 4 with a loss and you're not. Like, whoo, I understand it, but it doesn't make a lot of sense in a certain aspect. So, man,
I'm just, again, this whole,
we need more teams.
Just make it 12 and no one will care then. Mm-hmm. And then we can, and then again, everybody, there'll be a lot of different teams between like 10 and 14 that we can get in the argument with, but the teams that need to get in will get in. And I just think it'll make college football better. But
yeah,
I mean, hopefully this Gopher football team finds something better. And in 72 hours, Luke, there's a lot of happy Gopher fans, but starts with the offense. First 1-20 wins, Luke.
All right. Well, we want to thank our sponsors again, the Goal Line Club, Ayers Rock Planning, and the Burns Insurance Agency. Again, thank you for listening to Gopher Gridiron Radio, and go Gophers.